Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to No Holds Barred Season 3. I'm joined by Dick Bush. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm really good. I think I'm going to ask the most obvious question in the world here, and something that you no doubt have been asked before, but having been a director of pornography for 10 years, Dick Bush isn't your real name, is it?
Dick Bush, it is kind of my real name, yeah. My name's Richard. Richard Bush, Rick Bush to my friends, but yeah.
Dick Bush in the industry.
Dick Bush, that way no one will know the real me.
So tell me how you got started in the industry. What was your first steps into it?
So it was about 16 years ago, not 10 years ago.
Sorry, my bad.
And I just graduated from the London Film School with my MA in filmmaking, ready to head out into the world and become a proper filmmaker. And a colleague of mine from the film school, Alex, had found a job at this production company called Relish. And he was working there as a production manager and an editor, which was this porn company called Relish. And he said, you should come along for an interview to be an assistant editor. We're looking for assistant editors. And we're at this party at the film school and we're drunk and we're thinking, oh my God, can you imagine if we were able to write and direct a porn film, we'd make it the most classy, amazing porn film that anyone could have made. We're like, yeah, I know, man, because we know how to make films. And I said, okay, I'll come down for an interview. That's fine. And he said, I'm probably not going to get the job because there are more people going with more experience in editing. And I said, that's fine. And I turned
up. So you had a master's, an MA in film production,
in filmmaking, yeah.
Filmmaking. So, there are going to be people more qualified than you going for a job at a porn company.
Yeah, there are going to be people who have actually had a job as an editor going cool. for this assistant editor job.
Right.
And I spoke with the bosses, Jasper and Harry, and they seemed to like me. And then they locked me in their editing room for about 20 minutes and had me edit hardcore porn for 20 minutes.
What was you presented with? Like, what in its rawest form? Is it just scene, different various bits, or is it just from when the camera started to when it ended and they said, right, do something with that?
So they had an entire scene that they had shot with lots and lots of clips, all completely unedited. And they said, here's the raw footage of a scene we recently shot. Do whatever you want. You've got 20 minutes. And which is a bit overwhelming. And especially because it was an Avid editing system. And I'd recently been working on Final Cut. And I was like, oh, my God, how does this work again? I had to call in my friend Alex just to show me how to open a project.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, those are two video editing software, but completely different to use, right? It's like
they're similar, but they're a different. It's like I don't know, Apple and Android phones. They're similar functions, but different operating systems.
Yeah.
So managed to get everything open and started editing. And I had a sneaky look at what the previous guy who was there for an interview had edited. I opened his project,
right,
and he'd edited all of the acting bits which led up to the sex, which makes sense. That's what I was about to do. But I figured, well, okay, they know that we can edit normal things. They want to see what we're like at editing the sex, surely.
Yeah.
So I decided, okay, fuck all the acting stuff. I'm just going to start at the blowjob and work my way forward from there.
So what you compiled must have been a masterpiece because you got the job.
Apparently so. Like, as if in answer, Harry poked his head round the door and said, oh, and Dick, lots of close-ups, okay? Gave me a thumbs up, left me. I was like, oh, okay. So I did that, lots of close-ups, putting all the shots down. And yeah, 20 minutes later, Harry came back in, said, how are you getting on? And I say, whoa, just hold on. I'm just building up to a crescendo. Let me put these clips down. And they drag me off the computer and send me home. And I didn't hear back from them for a couple of days, assumed I wasn't really going to hear back from them. But then my friend Alex calls me very excited and says, do you want the job? And I go, okay, I guess. I wasn't planning on getting the job, but all right. You don't say no to work when you're fresh out of film school, I guess.
Hmm. Is it like a once you're in, you're in? Because your story doesn't, it's not unfamiliar to me. I've heard that other people that have ended up in the adult industry where they started. I did an interview in this series with a porn star called Shona Rivers.
Yeah, I've worked with her.
Wow. Well, there you go. So she had a similar entry in that there was a friend of hers that said, we know this guy. And he has rooms, and you won't have to do anything, but you can, you know, just, you know, it's cams, and you know, it's well paid. And then obviously her career blossomed from there, and she became a massive star. So that doesn't surprise me. But did you? I guess at that stage you were just thinking it's a job, it's something to do. I need money or whatever, and it, you know, we'll just, this is a stopgap until I get a film entered into Cannes or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I thought, okay, I'm actually making money, which in this industry of filmmaking and all filmmaking, everyone fresh out of the film school was getting jobs as a runner, which is very low paid or just not paid at all.
Yeah.
Which is very common to just get a job which isn't paid, but it gets you into a filmmaking or into a production company or something. And I was the only one amongst my group of friends from the film school that actually had a proper paid job. It wasn't well paid, but it was good enough, better than nothing. And it was fun as well. Like, I got to tell people, yeah, I'm working for this porn company. It's ridiculous.
I presume you didn't tell parents and close friends in that first instance, or was you really open with it?
No, I'm always open with it. And even before I got the job, and this was just before I went for the interview, I was speaking to my mum. So I was living in London. My parents still lived back in Cambridge. And I had to phone them and say, yes, I've got a job interview. It's for a production company. What do they make? What kind of films? Well, they kind of make porn. And I hear this little voice in the background saying, Mummy, what's porn? And my mum goes, Rick, you're on speakerphone. Your sister's in the back. Just my 12-year-old sister in the back. Mummy, what is porn? You're going to have to tell her that, Rick. So, yeah, I told them.
And it was, and I think they're okay with it.
Yeah, my mum didn't really tell people what I was doing. She would say, yeah, he works in the film industry. Oh, really? What kind of things does he make? And then she just quickly changed the subject. My dad, I think, was just happy that I had a job, because I think when I told him I wanted to be a filmmaker, he just thought, oh my God, I'm going to be paying for this guy for the rest of my life.
Mm. And what was your trajectory like through the production of Porn Light? So you started out as an assistant editor, and was it fast rise to being a director of pornography, or was it a slow burn?
A little bit of both. So within the first 2 weeks working there, my job was to rough edit their latest movie, which was about a pub called the Cockwell Inn.
Brilliant.
And I was supposed to rough edit it and then hand it over to my friend Alex, who would do the final edit. But he was busy doing lots of work on their previous movie, so I ended up editing the entire thing myself, and they were impressed with that. And I told them I had access to a Steadicam that we could use, and so they said, oh, do you want to come and shoot our next movie using the Steadicam? And I go, okay, I guess so.
So a Steadicam, for those people who don't, is you fasten it to yourself and you can walk around with it without it jolting and moving.
Yeah, that's it. This big old contraption strapped to you with these arms with springs and stuff, which keeps the camera steady. So within 2 weeks of working there,
you could get into some good positions with that camera, more so than a static camera.
Kind of.
All right.
It's too big. It's way too much equipment to use for porn, to be honest. Unless you're shooting some kind of action movie and you're doing lots of running, which we weren't. We're just using it because we had it.
Yeah.
But it was kind of annoying and hot as well. But yeah, so within 2 weeks of working there, I was on set filming people fucking, which was weird, really weird.
I was going to ask that. What is that change like from having living a normal life in inverted commas to doing something that absolutely it's got to be about 99% of the people listening to this, and certainly around Great Britain, are interested in, even if they don't talk about it. So it's completely normal, but it's completely abnormal. The production of it for many people is abnormal, right? Is that fair to say? So what was it like when you went from that sort of normal life, in inverted commas, to being in a room and watching people fuck?
It was... there was some kind of normality to it, because when you're holding a camera, you're looking at the screen and not at the people in front of you, really. You're just concentrating on that screen. So you're slightly removed from what's going on, and you just concentrate on that screen. But every now and then I'd look up and see that people are just going at it like 6 feet in front of me, and it's just weird. So you just go back to the screen and just concentrate on that. So you are a little bit removed from everything. But I remember after that first day of shooting, heading home in a taxi, and just thinking that everyone in London has no idea that I just did this. I just shot a porno, and feeling like I had this huge secret and that I was better than everyone in some way. that's the only way I can describe it.
No, I understand. It's like when something magical has happened to you, not saying that this is magic. I mean, it might have been magical for you, but when something, when something that jolts you, or something that you experience, something that is the vast majority of people haven't done, certainly in that day, and thinking, I've just done that. Yeah. I can understand that completely. It's a strange and quite addictive feeling, I guess. What we see on the internet, or historically on tapes and DVDs and whatnot, that is a condensed shoot, and as with any shoot of any filming. Film, there are lots of rushes and lots of time spent filming and to get down to a product that is something that could consumable by people at home. What is the reality then of a typical porn shoot? How long does it last? What's it like?
Well,
I have no idea.
Well, back then We were shooting two scenes in a day, so we'd and it wasn't sort of acting stuff. It was all very gonzo, reality-ish shoots. So picking up a girl from the street, or because we were doing movies called Fresh Off the Bus 1, 2, and 3, where we'd pick up a girl from the train station or a bus station, and then we'd give her a makeover and then introduce her to a guy, and they'd do it. It was really simple stuff. And we'd do two of those scenes in a day, and we'd get, and we'd start sort of midday and then get done at maybe 11 o'clock at night.
It's a long day.
Yeah, pretty long day. But then when now I'm shooting for bigger companies like Brazzers.com, we shoot one scene a day, and the day is a little bit more relaxed, and it tends to be a kind of 9 to 5, and we have makeup in the morning, we shoot all the acting that leads up to the sex, we break for lunch, and then after lunch we shoot the sex, and that's it, we go home.
So what is so how long, say a sex scene in a porno lasts, I don't know what typical it might be, 10 minutes, is that fair to say?
Usually about 30 minutes.
Oh, 30
so
minutes.
We do scenes. Yeah, we do scenes that are about 30 minutes, and maybe there's about 4 minutes of acting, and then the rest is sex.
And how long does the sex part have to, how long is the filming for the sex part? Is it 30 minutes, or how much do you do it? Hours of it that you cut down to 30 minutes?
It depends. Sometimes we can do it all in one go, and it takes about 30 minutes. Usually there's a couple of breaks in there. The performers are always able to just say, hey, can I get 2 minutes, or can I grab a drink? Can we grab some more lube? And we'll take a break. If we say we've got an hour to shoot the sex, that then we get it done within an hour, and we shoot 30 minutes worth of sex.
I don't want to reduce this, but I've got to ask it, Kat, just out of curiosity. What's the kind of worst things that you've seen on set, like things that don't make it into the final edit? Like, what's common that we wouldn't know about the filming of or the sex scenes in pornography?
Oh, buddy, the horrors that I have seen. we've done quite a few anal scenes in our time, and if you don't douche properly, there can be accidents. And it's very often that when you're doing anal sex and you pull out, there will be a little chunk on the end of the cock sometimes. You give it a wipe, you carry on.
Yeah, well, so it's quite a professional attitude to that sort of stuff.
You have to have a professional attitude. Yeah, you can't just go, oh, that's gross. Oh, look. You don't want to make these people feel uncomfortable. You just say, hey, cool, let's get a wipe. Somebody will come in with a wipe. And you carry on. Because if you're professional, it happens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's unfair to get freaked out by that. Certainly unfair on the girl. And whoever's receiving, depending on what you're watching. But it's completely natural, right, for that to happen. What isn't completely natural is to have anal sex for 10 minutes straight with a guy with a massive cock. So if something like that happens, it shouldn't be the end of the world.
No, not at all. There have been accidents, like massive accidents. When I was first working, it was a girl's first anal scene, and she'd douched, but she hadn't washed all of the liquid out.
Oh, wow.
And we got into a reverse cowgirl position with this girl and this guy, and as soon as she came off the cock, all this liquid just kind of poured out of her all over the guy, and it was epic. It was just
must have been mortified.
She was very embarrassed. The guy was just, oh my God. Our second cameraman was dry heaving in the corner. And she was really apologetic. We said, it's fine, it's fine. We got some towels, cleaned it up. I think the makeup artist took her off to clean her up and took a 10-minute break, and then everyone sort of came back and we got back into it.
What's the correct procedure if you want to avoid that from happening? When you say douche, I don't really know what does that mean.
So when a girl is cleaning out her asshole, they use this device called a douche, which is almost like a squeezy bottle syringe type thing, which you put into your asshole. You can also use it for your vagina, and you sort of inject water into you, which then washes everything out, and you do that to clean yourself. So there's no crap inside you. Basically.
Oh, okay. So that's the standard practice. If anyone's asking or wondering out there, that's what you need to do. I wonder, because you mentioned about Gonzo, which is kind of reality style porn, right? Before that, I'm not sure if this chronologically works. Before that, it seemed to be that porn was slightly different, and like storylines and characters and actors were more intrinsic, and then it did sort of seem to shift towards this more reality based stuff and more real, if you like, based stuff. Did you notice a shift in attitudes or what people wanted?
So when I started, it was 2006, and nearly everyone was doing Gonzo stuff. Just because we're shooting on digital tape, DV tape at that time, and it's just easier to point a camera at people and then just improvise something. And it seemed like the audience did just want to see sort of fake reality. That's what Gonzo is. And nobody really did storyline stuff. I think just because it's hard to do it right, you have to write a script. You have to shoot like a filmmaker and have it edited like a film and put music on it. And all that takes effort and work. And at the time, because everything was so cheap to make, cameras and tapes and stuff, the people making porn weren't filmmakers. They were just people with cameras, if you see what I mean. So it's much easier just to shoot reality based stuff rather than storyline film type things. But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to shoot storylines and stuff, and I kept pitching them ideas. Let's do this kind of film. Let's make an action movie. Let's do some guns and stuff, because that's what I love doing. And they kept saying, no, it'll look shit. It'll, you know, we can't afford to make it look good. And we were doing one scene called Arscapades, the series called Arscapades, which is again Gonzo, and I was the presenter, and I had a briefcase full of money, and I got given these challenges to find this type of person and get them to have sex with this kind of person. It was almost like Challenge Annika, but porno. For Arscapades 3, Missionary Impossible, I filmed this little gunfight at the beginning where me and my friend Alex are just shooting guns at each other, and we put these muzzle flashes on these BB guns that we had, and then I get a phone call saying, we need more Arscapades, and I'm like, I'm on my way, and then the movie starts. And they loved that. They were like, oh my God, this is amazing. And they had a little meeting about it, and then they came into the editing room and said, Dick, we've had a little discussion and we've decided to greenlight your action porno.
That's beautiful. So what was that called, your action porno?
That was called Girls with Guns.
That's good.
And it was 5 scenes which started with some kind of shootout, no dialogue, and then ended with sex. No dialogue throughout the entire thing. And I still got a massive poster of it in my office right now. It's a really cool film. I mean, it looks kind of shitty now because it was shot on DV. It's not in HD.
Yeah.
But it was a really fun movie to make. And I think all of the performers in it loved doing it, because no one was making this kind of stuff at the time. Everyone was making Gonzo. No one makes action porno with guns and stuff.
Was it a commercial success?
I think so, because we did a sequel, Girls with Guns 2, and it was shown on the adult channel, and yeah, DVDs were sold, and we had all these posters made up for sex shops to put up in the shops and things. But who cares if it was a success? I never make stuff thinking, oh, this might sell well. I just make stuff that I think that I want to see, or I'm going to have fun making.
Well, I guess I asked that question because I had this lovely image of you going on to become like a powerhouse in this this story-led, you know, like a resurgence, a renaissance of what proper porn should be. And it started with you and your mate shooting guns at each other. So I quite like the start.
That's that was the start of it, really. Yeah, after a couple of years at being at Relish, they lost their contract with Playboy, who owned the adult channel, and that was a big part of their income, and so they had to let go all of the production department, and they brought us back freelance to shoot a couple more movies. But then a photographer guy who was working for Relish started his own production company and said, Dick, can you come and shoot some movies for me? I'll give you this much money. And it was like so much more than what I was getting for Relish. And I was like, yeah, okay. So I started making like a movie every other month for this new company called Kaizen XXX. And we were shooting for Television X at that time. And I got to write all of the scripts and shoot, direct and edit and do everything. And I got, you know, they were like, oh, what should we do next? I don't know. Let's do superheroes. Great. And so we made a movie called Power Girls, which is superheroes. What do you want to do now? I don't know. I've always wanted to do like a horror movie. Okay, let's do a horror movie. So we made Screwed, which is a sort of a play on the Saw movies.
Oh, Saw. Okay. Screwed.
Yeah. So people got.
Yeah, go on.
In every situation, these people are backpacking and they arrive at this place where they stay, but then they fall asleep and they wake up and they're in some kind of dungeon with a contraption or some kind of escape room scenario. And there's a voiceover saying, you have to do this or this, or this will happen and you die. So the first episode was a guy and he had this contraption on his head with two screws pointing at his skull, and he had to make this woman orgasm within 20 minutes or the screws will get screwed into his brain, and he doesn't manage it.
He dies at the end.
What a tragedy. None of them succeed. They all fail because you want a death scene at the end.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not often that you get to play with like fake blood and stuff in a porno.
You went like it was pretty macabre.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So in that first scene with the screws, we just got a close up of his head, like the camera zooms in and he's screaming, and then we had a syringe with a tube attached to somewhere in his face, and it would just run blood down his face as he was screaming, and that's how the scene ends.
Honestly, that's the worst thing I'd want to see post climax, because like it's like you know when you've been knocking one out, and then afterwards you go, oh god, I'm disgusted with myself, and then you're confronted with a man being excruciatingly killed.
Yep, I literally do not give a shit.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I just wanted to make something really cool. But inadvertently, by doing that, you create these movies which people start talking about and going, oh my God, you've got to see this, and sort of passing them around and stuff.
Course, yeah, definitely. What did you make about the change in the industry in terms of the how people consume it? So Television X might have been one thing, Playboy TV might have been another, sex shops and DVDs and that kind of thing was one thing, and then obviously things like streaming, YouTube style sites like, I don't know, Pornhub, changed it completely, didn't it? Did it affect you in terms of your work, and were people in the industry worried about the impact that sort of free porn on the internet would have?
So when I started, DVDs were sort of on their way out, kind of. They were still, people were selling a lot, but it was, internet sites were just starting with porn. And I think we were thinking, like, there was this struggle in the industry, like, what's going to be the future? This seems like it's the future. Do we still sell DVDs? Do we not? But I've never been a producer. I've always been the guy making them. So it's never really been my decision to do what, how to sell this stuff. Yeah, or to worry. Yeah, I've never had any worries. But it was obvious that online was going to be the future of everything. It was just a matter of how to properly monetize that. And as soon as something's online, it seemed like people were giving it away for free almost. So it was really difficult to monetize it completely. But, Pornhub and places like that did kind of revolutionize everything, and they created a way for production companies to monetize stuff by giving away free bits but then upselling to their own websites and stuff like that. That's how those sites work. But it was OnlyFans that really revolutionized, like, the whole industry, really.
Go on.
So when OnlyFans started, and people, models in particular, so there were some models that had their own websites, but it cost money to make a website, and it cost money to hire someone to manage your websites, or you had to be very knowledgeable about websites in order to run them smoothly. And then OnlyFans comes along, and the people in the industry saw that, oh wow, okay, so I could, it's just like Twitter, but I can put stuff, I can put sex on here, and then people have to pay to follow me. It was like this light bulb moment where I don't think OnlyFans was supposed to be for porn at the beginning. It was supposed to be sort of for celebrities.
Yeah.
But porn just took over it, and it made so much money, and it gave models a way to monetize their own content and become their own bosses, and they didn't have to wait for a production company to hire them for work. Suddenly they could just make their own movies on their phone and upload that, and they're their own producers, they're their own bosses. And it was just incredibly empowering for models not to have to rely on production companies for their income.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that there are some production companies out there that have less standards, and maybe that a girl who might be vulnerable would be able to control her environment in the way that perhaps having to go somewhere else might not. Or would you say that's a misconception about the porn industry, that, you know?
It's a slight misconception. If you're a production company and you're known in the UK or anywhere, and you actually are a production company with a crew of more than one, then you're pretty safe. You're fine. It's the guys who have just bought a video camera and then say, hey, I'm a production company, do you want to come to my house and suck my cock and I'll film you? You know, there's this, like, where's the line between, okay, surely you're just a punter hiring someone to have sex with you and calling yourself a production company? You know, there's this thin line where you're not quite sure.
Yeah. So is there a regulation? What kind of regulation is there? And surely is there any sort of safeguarding from, say, the government that might prevent someone from pretending to be a production company or is this just, too difficult to police? What is that situation?
I don't think there's any kind of governance or anything. It's just there's Twitter and models talk to each other and that's it. And as soon as a girl goes to a new production company and tries that and has a bad experience, she tells everyone and they're completely blacklisted. It's almost better than governance because
it works quick.
It's them talking. And yeah, and everyone, and models and production companies, they have WhatsApp groups where they chat with each other and discuss all these things. So there's safety in being a tight-knit community of models where everyone talks to each other and is open and honest with each other.
Yeah, and like you said, it is better than governance and government-led sort of initiatives. While those are important, you know, having that works quickly. One girl says, don't go to this guy, he's wrong. Then no one does, and then it's over for him pretty much. So, I understand how that works a lot better. I was going to ask, and I don't know if you, because I didn't say that I was going to ask you this before, but I was wondering how sort of being in the industry has affected your relationship with sex at all.
I don't know. I guess it made me not desensitized. I think it might be different if I was a performer and getting paid to have sex a lot. But when you're filming it and directing it, it's very different from having sex yourself. And people do ask me that question. And I think being in the industry, because I was quite a shy person naturally. When I was younger, and being in the industry and being a director and telling people what to do and being the guy in charge on a set and just saying, okay, this shot here, do this, do that, has made me more of a confident person.
I can understand that as well. Definitely. Because imagine if I was a kid and I was like, I was like 16, and most, you know, movies would have you believe otherwise, but most boys at 16, 17 are typically quite shy. It's quite a sensitive time. And going in, and I know that you was older. Was you early 20s when you started?
I was 25.
25. So, but going in there and being the director, and in any sense, but you know, and having what I'd assume as sort of and this is again, is this a misconception? Like a muscle bound bloke with big, with a massive dick, and this beautiful woman listening to you as you direct them to do the best thing they can do would be quite empowering.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and but you also become friends with all these people because the UK industry, especially, is quite small, so you very quickly get to know everyone and just become pals.
Yeah.
And you get to know the people that you like working with, and you work with them over and over again. So the idea of sex becomes, it doesn't feel unattainable, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and
I
think... And when I'm chatting with people, if I'm at a party or if I'm around people and people know what I do, then I find that I don't have to try hard to make conversation. There's always conversation because everyone has questions and everyone wants to know stuff.
Yeah.
And I always have lots of stories to tell. So in that way, it's like a lubricant for socializing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it completely. And what about when you're working? Is it, do you feel that, because it is work. I can't imagine all of the cameramen are walking around with stiffies, are they? They're there to do a job.
No.
It becomes something. It isn't necessary. It's sex that you're watching, but it's not for your, it doesn't work in that same way because you're focusing on other things, I'd imagine. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally it. It's completely work. And by the time we get to the sex, I'm usually pretty exhausted from shooting all of the acting stuff, and I'm mostly just concentrating on getting the shots looking amazing, making sure the lighting is great, and I just, you know, we just want to get it done and go home because we've got to do something completely different the next day. It's like a conveyor belt of shooting stuff. We just got to get it done.
And is it something, is it too personal to ask, is it do you watch porn recreationally now, or is it just sort of not, there's nothing, no appeal to it at all?
Sure, yeah. But not the stuff that I've made. That would be weird. And if someone I know is in it,
yeah.
if I recognize, if I know the guy in it, I'm like, oh, I can't watch this.
it
limits
mates.
It a bit.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to ask you another question. Are you sort of critical of other people's work then? I can't watch this.
Sometimes.
It's beneath me. Yeah.
So especially if they're making, if it's a movie that they've made, like I'll put on, what did I put on? It was a Suicide Squad parody that Axel Braun had made, and everyone was talking about it at the time, so I was like, oh cool, okay, I'll check this out. And I was watching bits of it and I was just like, oh, that's disappointing, and this Tommy guy is doing a really great job at being the Joker, but it looks kind of crappy and people are liking this one. So yeah, sometimes I'll be critical of stuff, and sometimes, and if I see a sex scene, I'll be like, no, don't put the camera there, you want it up here. But
yeah,
usually that's stuff that I'm editing, because sometimes people will send me content to shoot, to edit myself, and I'll send it back to them to put on their OnlyFans. That's my side hustle. And stuff that wasn't shot by me, very critical about. I will just be shouting at the screen going, what are you doing, you imbecile? Don't put the camera there. No, put it on top. You can't, not that close. What are you doing?
what is like a major failure, you think, like a what's it, like a your pet peeve with footage that you get? Is it something like too close, or what is it that annoys you most?
Yeah, actually it's too close. It's so the people who were prevalent when I started shooting, and these guys have been in the game for maybe 10 years or so, they would shoot everything so close up for some reason. I think it's because they were shooting on VHS or just starting on DV and it wasn't HD, and so to get quality you have to go close up. But these days you could shoot everything wide and just zoom in post, and you still got it there because everyone's shooting in 4K. So you don't need to zoom in so much. And because everything's in 4K, it's almost too much detail. Like, you don't want to see that much detail of a cock and a pussy come back. It's almost sexier to see the entire body getting fucked. Maybe a few close-ups, but not extreme close-ups. Like you're right there next to a cock. Nobody wants that. Some people want that. But
I know now that you're saying this, it's not something that's been conscious of me, but that I've noticed. But when I was a kid, and you know, and you're finding tapes in your dad's cupboard, and you're like, oh, what's this? And there was a lot of close-up stuff, super close-up stuff. And it did seem, it has seemed to phase out through the years. I think that might be the reason why. I'm glad I appreciate that now. would it be too private to ask about how where your relationships have come from? Do you find that you have more relationships and more in common? And I'm not just talking about sort of sexual relationships. I'm talking about, like, you know, friendships as well with people in the industry, because they understand completely what you do, or do you find that it's better outside of the industry?
So I'm friends with some people in the industry, mostly with people outside the industry, and I've had some relationships with people in the industry. I don't think I'd do that again. But I don't know. I think these days people know porn, and it's a lot more mainstream than it was 10, 20 years ago. People get that it's there, and so many people have an OnlyFans account. Even people who aren't traditional porn stars will have an OnlyFans account and will sell pictures of themselves in bikinis and stuff. So I think a lot more people get it and have seen behind the scenes, they've seen documentaries, and are a lot more understanding, and it's less taboo these days, I guess.
Yeah, so you wouldn't feel uncomfortable bringing it up?
No, never. No, and I've always told myself that I'm always 100% honest. If someone asks me what I do, then I tell them, and I don't apologize for it, because that will almost make it seem like it's a bad thing when I'm just doing a job.
You're also doing something that, like I said at the top of this interview, is that this is, people are fascinated by it. They wouldn't be as huge as it is if it wasn't something that serves the needs of so many people. Like, it's unbelievable. Probably more, I'd imagine it serves the needs of more people than any other form of entertainment, you know, at all.
Yeah, probably.
Well, if you look,
and there's
the
probably
platforms,
more of it as well. There's so much of it getting made that it's endless. Like, you know how you say that you could never watch all of the movies, the, you know, Hollywood movies made in your lifetime. If you watch them back to back, you'd never be able to watch them all. Compared to porn, that's nothing. Like, if you try to watch all porn that's ever been made, you'd only watch a tiny little
percentage,
pinprick amount. There's so much of it, which means there's so much crap, but also cream always rises to the top, I like to think.
On that then, you mentioned at the beginning that you now work for Brazzers, if I'm right, and I might be wrong, they seem to be the biggest company out there. Certainly the production values seem to be the highest.
Yeah, they're one of the biggest porn companies in the world. Yeah, that was amazing starting shooting stuff for them. So that was when I was working with a production company called Kaizen XXX. There was, Brazzers had this competition, and they sent, you could sign up to be, as a production company, to be involved in this competition to get a contract with Brazzers. They sent everyone the same script, which was set in a classroom, and we hired Danny D to come be the guy, and we had Kerry Louise to be the girl. We shot the scene, sent it up to Brazzers, and it went really well. It's a really, really good scene. and they, we didn't win. Someone, a production company in America won, but they were, they liked us so much and they liked Danny so much because he's hung like a horse. They gave Danny a performing contract, and they gave Kaizen a producing contract for a year or so, shooting stuff. We were going to be shooting all Brazzers stuff in Europe, basically. And from that moment on, we were just a Brazzers production company shooting all these Brazzers scenes. And I was writing all of the scripts at that time, and I was also editing everything at that time. But we just had a lot more money to play with, which led us to shooting cool films like our Doctor Who parody, which was something that I wanted to do for a long, long time. And we did this Doctor Who parody called The Doctor. It was in three parts, and it was like proper filmmaking with a big budget and special effects, and it was awesome. And I wrote the scripts as if they were real episodes from Doctor Who. I didn't make it too silly, didn't make it too porny. Yeah, the Doctor ends up having sex, but it's all proper sci-fi storylines within them. And it got nominated for an AVN award, for several AVN awards. And I got nominated for Best Director for that. And it was this amazing thing where we're like, oh my God, I think we're going to go to Vegas to the AVN Awards, which are like the Oscars of porn. And none of us really thought that we were going to win. And I remember I had like a little flashback back to my Relish days where I thought it would be so good to win some awards, but we're not making anything award worthy, but it would be cool to win an award for something. And as I was working for Kaizen for Television X, we won a few awards in the UK, which is great, but never any of the big American stuff. It just always seemed way out of our league. And The Doctor won three AVN awards, one for best sex scene in a foreign shot movie, one for best foreign feature, and one for best foreign director.
Wow.
So I actually got an award with my name on it.
Yeah.
And it was,
what did that do for you? Did that do anything for your career otherwise, other than obviously you was already working for Brazzers, which is pretty good, or almost it's fantastic, but what does that give you, an element of credibility that you didn't have before?
It did, and it just made us known throughout the industry a lot more. And Brazzers and Digital Playground, which is another company owned by the same people, they make more cinematic stuff. We got bigger movies to work on. We did a couple of Star Wars parodies and all these epic movies and Game of Thrones parodies. And I remember getting interviewed for Vanity Fair for our Game of Thrones parody. We were just making epic movies with big budgets and costumes and locations. We did one movie called League of Frankenstein, which is a mashup of all these public domain characters like Frankenstein and Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, Alice in Wonderland, and Tarzan, all fighting pirates from another dimension set in 1938. And I think that was our biggest movie that we've done. And I liked the story so much that I turned it into a book, and I wrote a novel called League of Frankenstein, no sex in it. It's almost like a children's fantasy. I just like the story so much.
Yeah, yeah. Look,
available on Amazon now.
Okay, yeah. You just have to. Is it under your name or is it under your pseudonym, for want of a better expression? Is it?
It's under Rick Bush. That book, yeah.
Okay, I've got a couple more questions. Actually, just on that, I kind of wanted to end on this, but I've got other questions before, but it kind of links better now, is that you seem, since we started talking, you seem so interested in the still in the craft of filmmaking, and people outside the industry would say that, certainly without having watched the films you've just described, would say that, that's not what pornography is about. It's fundamentally about the sex, but you still seem completely driven by narrative and structure. Do you have any aspirations to do stuff outside of porn? Have you ever thought about moving in that? I'm sure you have, but what did you think about moving in that direction?
Yeah, that was the plan 16 years ago, to do this for a short amount of time and then get some money together, shoot a short film, have that win lots of awards, and then I'd be filming the next Star Wars movie. Mm. That's how it works, right? But No, people just kept offering me more and more money to make porn movies for them. And it's very difficult to say no when people are offering you lots of money and lots of definite work. But I have made a few short films. I made a sketch comedy series on YouTube featuring porn stars. And I've written a few scripts, currently writing a feature film script, which may happen. It's still something that I'd like to do. That's sort of the last thing on my bucket list. One was to write a novel, and I wrote two novels, and one is to write and direct a feature film, which I will do at some point.
Yeah, when you know, when you listen to you, obviously it's still such an intrinsic part of the work that it's a good thing. I'd look forward to seeing that, and I'm going to check your book out as well. I just want to take back to a couple of things I picked up as we were talking. Danny D, is it Danny D?
Yep, Danny D.
What was so impressive about his performance? I know you said he's hung like a horse, but it's more than just having a big dick, right?
It is. He's a really good actor, and he's funny, and he can do the serious stuff as well. So right now I work with his production company. It's his production company that hires me to shoot stuff for Brazzers. And he can play anything. That's what's great about Danny, is that if we're doing a comedy, he has great comedic timing. And he can do different accents, and he can play different characters. He can play it the tough guy. He can play the nerdy guy. And then you can also write dramatic stuff for him, and he can play dramatic. We've put him in lots of action movies as well, and he can do the action. He's just very malleable. You can put Danny as any kind of character.
So he's a good actor, and he can play characters.
That's it. And he knows what he's doing with the sex stuff as well.
Yeah, so what I guess that's what I'm trying to boil down into is obviously that performing and knowing what when I say knowing what to do, I don't even know what I'm saying what I mean by that. What does he have to do that's different from having normal sex? Is it just so you can see everything? Is it being able to get into positions that are uncomfortable but be able to hold it? Is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, so a porn star will have to have sex, but not for them. They have to do it for the camera, which means lots of turning your body into weird positions, which might not feel comfortable, but it looks good for the camera. And if you've got a big cock, it's a lot easier to get into those positions where you're sort of opening up and turning your body so you can see. And a good porn star will know how to adjust their body and adjust the model's body to make it look good for camera. And I've worked with lots and lots of people, and the guys who are at the lower ends of the industry, they just have sex, and you have to tell them, okay, I need you to do this. Okay, can you just turn here? Okay, just open up a little bit. Can you just move here? Okay, just don't put your hand there. And it interrupts the flow of the sex. You're never going to get a great sex scene with super professionals like Danny. I hardly have to say anything at all because Danny knows exactly what he's doing. He'll know where the camera is. He'll keep one eye on it and he will move the girl into positions. And if she's moving into the wrong position, he will move her into the position where we wanted to go to or what looks better for camera. He'll recognize where the lights is coming from and open up so the light gets in. And he'll do all that subconsciously, almost.
So he's almost directing as well, to some degree, as he's having sex.
Yeah, it's like he's directing himself, but it's going to make the best sex scene. And every now and then, I'll say, "Hey, how about we get into this position because we haven't done that?" Or if he's having too much fun, I'll go, "Dan, just remember, there's a camera here." but yeah, it's very collaborative. Filming a sex scene, it isn't just about the director saying, "Okay, do this, do that. I want emotion on your face." It's a collaboration with whoever's holding the camera, directing it, and the performers. It is like this dance that everyone's doing, and if everyone knows what they're doing and is working in conjunction with everyone, then you get an amazing sex scene.
I'd imagine someone less experienced than Danny, being interrupted and asked to stop doing what they're doing might take them out of the mood somewhat, and they might find it difficult to maintain an erection. Is that must be common, is it? Or
yeah, that can be common. Thankfully, the people that I tend to work with are at the upper end of everything and don't tend to have that problem.
So they're just hard.
Yeah,
the whole
that
scene
can happen. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That is impressive.
that is, but it gets everything done, and that's the job, and that's why not many guys are in the industry, because it's a very hard job.
Yes, it must be difficult because there's the mental aspect of it. There's the fact that obviously they have to be aroused by the scene, but being in that environment might not. But it must be terrifying for most people, I'd imagine. Certainly, and obviously the male aspect of it is that they can physically see whether they're turned on or not.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is.
And I think it's just practice, and it's just doing it for a good year. Like, it's very uncommon for a guy just to start at the top and just be amazing. Everyone pays their dues. Everyone gets in at the bottom and has. And is really crap at doing it and don't really know what they're doing. But they, back in the day, they just work for some of the lower end production companies. They get paid a little bit to come in and do something. They just get used to it. And the more they work, they spend a year doing that kind of stuff, and then they can work for the bigger companies. These days, it's all about OnlyFans and collaborating with other models and shooting content. But even then, it's usually just a couple of models and a phone filming everything. There's no crew. So moving into big production companies, getting filmed by an entire crew, a guy with a boom microphone standing there, two guys on camera, makeup artist in the corner, can be daunting and different and a lot of pressure. And it's the guys who just don't care about that pressure who really make it. It's the guys who don't think a lot. This might sound a bit harsh, but it was always the guys with not a lot going on upstairs who were really good at the sex, just because they were like, "Have sex, woo, hey." But you couldn't have a conversation with them afterwards. But at least they're doing a good
so
sex scene.
Essentially, that for whatever reason they don't overthink the scenario they're in. They are just. They're able to just perhaps there isn't an element of compartmentalization, but there was just they are able to just get on with it because they're not overthinking it. Because that's the worst thing about maintaining an erection. As soon as a certain thought might come into your head, you're like, "Oh fuck, it's over." Do you know, I'm never getting this back. Certainly not in the next hour.
That's exactly it. So if you're a kind of guy who never has a thought in their head, you're not going to have that problem.
indeed. All right, Dick, I think that's a great way to end it. Thank you so much. Just quickly, you mentioned a book, so it was Rick Bush.
Yep.
And if you want to find it on Amazon, you can go.
Couple of books available: League of Frankenstein, and my thriller is A Better Way to Kill.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.